Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Well, the New England Patriots billionaire owner Robert Kraft pleaded not guilty this week to charges of soliciting prostitution. The charges stem from an ongoing human trafficking investigation in several South Florida counties. The United Nations reports that sexual exploitation remains the most widespread form of human trafficking around the world. We wanted to take a deeper look at trafficking related to massage parlors in the U.S. Joining us now is Meredith Dank, an expert on human trafficking at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York. Meredith, welcome to Here and Now.
Thank you for having me.
There's still a lot we don't really know about this case with Robert Kraft and the wider trafficking investigation surrounding it. But when you first heard about the story, what were your thoughts?
My thoughts immediately went to the women who were involved in the massage parlor and what was happening to them. Were they arrested? And my understanding is they weren't. But in that case, were they receiving any kind of services or immigration relief?
What do we know about who's working in these parlors? I mean, some of the women might be immigrants and possibly have sketchy legal statuses. But from your research, what do we know about how women are recruited for these?
So the recruitment, I think, can happen in many different ways. Sometimes in their home country, oftentimes it's China or Korea or Thailand, they might be approached about a work opportunity. In some cases, people are very open about the fact that they might be working in a massage parlor and they can make the choice as to whether or not they want to do that. In other cases, they're told they would work in a restaurant or a nail salon and then they come here. And there are definitely cases where women are then forced or coerced into working in a massage parlor. But what I often hear is that they're paying a snakehead, sometimes upwards of tens of thousands of dollars, and they have to pay that.
A trafficker, ahead of a trafficker.
Yes. And they have to pay that debt back. Mm-hmm. And so they come here, they might start working in a restaurant or a nail salon and not make much money. And as a result, they have to look for other ways in which they can do that and fly under the radar, especially if they're not on a legal visa.
Well, we know that these illicit massage businesses have existed in the U.S. for a long time, and they're often fronts for prostitution. But how much do we really know about these parlors and how they operate, the whole thing?
We don't know much. There hasn't been a ton of research that's been done to date. I've done a little bit of research in interviewing law enforcement about what they've been seeing, particularly trends over time. And there definitely has been a proliferation of these massage parlors, particularly in the Midwest and in the South. However, the actual operation of the massage parlors is still very much a big question. You know, who is operating them? Is there a larger organization behind it? Or is it tend to be just mom and pop type of massage parlors where somebody opens it up? They might have networks with other massage parlors across the country, but there isn't one single person behind it.
And so we don't know a lot about the larger potential global trafficking chain behind that as well.
Correct.
And is that because there's reluctance to talk, that researchers are having trouble getting access, or what?
I think that is definitely a big piece is, you know, who would we speak to other than law enforcement, which can provide, I think, one point of view. Mm. But what's really important to be able to understand the true dynamics of this, of these parlors and the operation, is to be able to talk to the people working with inside of them, which is where I think we would really begin to understand whether or not there's actual sex trafficking happening. I think that's something law enforcement has really struggled with finding evidence for. In the case of the Robert Kraft situation, you know, some of the details I saw, it kind of was more about labor trafficking, the fact that they were living in the place that they were working, that the living conditions were pretty subpar. These are all signs of actual labor trafficking, not necessarily sex trafficking. So I think there's still a lot we need to learn to even begin to get the nuance of this problem.
I want to get your response to some tape from the Martin County, Florida Sheriff's Office that opened this investigation. Sheriff William Snyder spoke earlier this week with our colleagues at All Things Considered. He said, you know, one of the reasons sex trafficking continues today is because many of the women working in these businesses just don't want to cooperate with law enforcement.
Invariably, our methodology has been, up until we did this here, we'll send a couple of undercover detectives in. They'll, you know, be solicited for sex. We'll arrest the workers and shut the place down, and the problem goes away, but not really goes away. And so when this came in, I made the decision that we would treat this differently. and that we would go after the traffickers and the men, the end users.
Meredith, what do you think about the sheriff's strategy of going after the Johns and potentially the larger traffickers?
Well, first of all, I think we need to determine whether or not there's actual sex trafficking happening here, or if it's exploitation, gender-based violence, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But let's say there is a trafficker behind that. I think that is a good strategy, is to try and determine who that might be. Mm-hmm. In some cases, the massage parlor, the person that you would get access to is the middle manager, not necessarily the person who owns it or the person who's operating it. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important that we really begin to understand, again, the structure of how a massage parlor works. And then as far as the Johns go and targeting them, I think there's a lot of issues that can come up if you're just solely focusing on the demand side of things. It doesn't necessarily get rid of the issue that these women are coming in here and looking for ways in order to pay that debt back. And there are very few options available to them. That doesn't mean that working in a massage parlor should be the only option. But I think we really need to be creative and think about how we can help these women in order to provide opportunities for women who don't want to be doing this and are constrained in the choices available to them to be able to pay back this debt or pay for whatever other kind of debt that they might have is really, I think, the angle we should be taking.
Meredith Dank is an expert on human trafficking and a research professor at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York City. Meredith, thanks so much.
Thank you.